This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Walking as Children of Light, a devotional. And the author is Carol A. Gibson, and Carol joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Steve. Hi.
Well, great to have you with us. We certainly need to be uplifted, inspired, and that's your whole purpose here with your book, Walking as Children of Light, a devotional. Let me read what you've written about this book. You say it's the true story of an ever-present God who initiated a deep and loving relationship with a not-so-special struggling saint whose meditations on living a life in intimacy with him flesh out what the Bible teaches us about God and his love for us. Well, that really is something that we could talk about for the rest of the time, just that paragraph alone.
I guess, yes.
Well, that was very well said, and really, that's kind of what we're all, probably those of us who believe in God, I hope we look at ourselves, you know, struggling, but at the same time, obviously the Bible teaches us about God and his love for us, and I guess that's the focus of your book, isn't it?
That's right, and, you know, with some of the amazing things that happened to me that I wrote about in the book, I mean, amazing to me, and I think amazing to other people, I think the really important thing for people to know is that, I mean, I look at some other Christians and I think, oh, I will never be that spiritual. I will never be that good of a Christian. I will never be that advanced as a Christian. And I think one of the points I'd like to get across is that I'm not a really well-advanced Christian. I think if you talk to people who know me in my everyday life, they'll say, yeah, she's a struggling saint, all right. You know, I have a lot of issues I struggle with all the time, but God doesn't hold that against me. You know, I mean, God doesn't hold that against us, not just me, but all of his children. He's gracious and loving and generous and kind and patient and long-suffering with us. It amazes me all the time. And that he did the things he did in my life in spite of me, that just shows you how great God is.
Well, you're very humble, Carol, and that's, I'm sure, why these devotional pieces are right on target, because you're trying to share from your heart. Well, tell us about how this came about. How did this book come about? How did you get involved in writing so much?
Well, actually, my career, I was trained as a secretary, and I was working sometimes as a secretary, but not full-time because my children were at home. So I was working sometimes as a secretary, but the pastor of my church called me this one day, and he said, Carol, this morning during my quiet time, God asked me to call you and to ask you if you would be willing to write devotional pieces that would be bulletin inserts and for every Sunday's bulletin. And I said, are you sure? Because I think there's a problem here. I don't know anything about writing. I'm not a writer. I've never written anything. I mean, I think this might be a mistake. And he said, no, I'm certain that God asked me to ask you to write bulletin inserts. So I said, you know, if God really asked him to give me that job with the church, not that it was a paying job, but just, you know, that assignment within the church, that whether I thought I could do it or not, I really ought to try. And so I began writing bulletin inserts, and they really were a big hit with the people. They liked them a lot, and I would get comments almost every Sunday about, I really enjoyed your insert this week, Carol, you know. So I settled in. I was pretty comfortable writing them, and I really was amazed at how it kind of I don't know, fleshed out the saying that whom God calls, he equips, because I didn't even know I was equipped. And some time passed, quite a while passed, and then one Sunday the pastor came back to me and he said, Carol, this week during my quiet time, I felt that God told me that he would like you to gather your material together and fashion it into a book. And I said to myself, you know, what I think really happened, I was thinking to myself, was that the pastor just really especially liked the piece for that week, and he said to himself, or his mind said to himself, she ought to write a book, you know? And so I said, because I don't know anything about writing a book, and I really half didn't want to believe it. But several days later, an elderly woman from the church who had been a lifelong Christian, she came to me and she said, you know, Carol, this week during my quiet time, God asked me to ask you to tell you that he'd like you to bring all your work together and fashion it into a book. And when that happened, I said, like, this is just, these things don't happen. I mean, this is, it's, that's not a coincidence. And so I began thinking about how do I do this? How do I write a book? And really, for a very long time, I knew nothing about how to write a book. I didn't know any people who wrote books. I didn't know where to begin. And so after a while passed, I said to myself, you know, not knowing how to do this is not going to fly with God. You know, this is not going to be an excuse when someday he says, I wanted you to write a book and you didn't do it. You know, this, I'm really disappointed in you for not doing that. And so I thought, you know, that's not going to be an excuse. And so I was standing in my kitchen one day and I said to myself, well, gee, I mean, how do I, maybe I need to meet up with people who write books, and maybe there's an organization somewhere of people who write books. And, you know, one thought leads to another. And I thought to myself, yeah, well, maybe there's like a writer's guild of people in my area who write books, and maybe I'll join them and find out how to write a book. So the next thought that came to my mind was Christian Writers Guild. And I said, yeah, that's what I'll go online. I'll do a search. I'll do a Google search, right? And I'll go online and I'll just try to find one in my area. So I went online and I Googled www.christianwritersguild.com. And do you know what came up? Do you know Jerry Jenkins, who wrote the Left Behind series?
Yes.
Well, he's the head of the Christian Writers Guild. There really is a Christian Writers Guild. And it's a school that teaches people how to be Christian writers. So I enrolled right away because I thought, you know, I felt that that was from God, that I wouldn't have had the thought Christian Writers Guild and followed up and looked into it, except that it was like a nudging from God. Mm-hmm. So having looked into it, I found out that they had, you know, different levels of courses. And so I signed up for and paid for and took the 2-year apprentice course and completed it in 2010. And by that time, as part of the course, I had an awful lot of the book already written. So that's how I wrote a book.
Well, fantastic. And there's nothing like having 2 or 3 witnesses testifying to you.
That's the case. You know,
yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about a few of these stories. They're your experiences, and there's some very obviously sobering ones, serious ones. You're off camping with your 2 small children and your parents, and what happened on the camping trip?
Well, we went camping. My husband stayed at home in Pennsylvania. At the time, we lived up in northwestern Pennsylvania, right on the border between, like, there's Erie, Pennsylvania, which is right on Lake Erie, and then that's right on the border with New York State. And so if a lot of people go camping, they go over to New York State. There's some fine campgrounds over there. So we had left Pennsylvania and we went over to New York State and we were camping, and the evening wore on and we were sitting around the campfire and it had gotten dark, and I was watching the campfire, and you know how the flames leap and dance in the campfire, and I was watching this sort of feeling quiet and not really concerned with anything, no problems going on or anything. And all of a sudden, I don't know how to explain the stillness that came into my soul, but my entire mind and spirit and soul became absolutely silent. There is a term, I think, in it's called absolute zero. It has to do with how cold things can get when no molecules move. You know, that's absolutely as cold as anything can get. Well, it felt like that in my soul. It was like there was just quiet. And with this quiet, as soon as the quiet came, then came this, I realized I was no longer married. And it wasn't like a wondering, it was a knowing. And I thought, that is very odd. How can I not be married? My husband's in Pennsylvania and I'm here at this campfire, but I'm certain I'm not married. And right then my daughter started to cry kind of hard, and I went to the camper and I climbed in bed with her and I was holding her, and she, you know, went back to sleep so that she'd be comforted. But after a little while, I saw a car coming around the bend in the campground, and I knew that car was looking for me. I don't know how I knew, but I knew that driver was looking for me. And pretty soon it stopped in front of our camper, and there was this knock on the door, and my dad answered the camper door, and I heard them talking, and he came back inside and said something to my mother in a very low voice, and she said, "Carol, get the children dressed. We have to return to Pennsylvania. Jack's been in an accident." And I said, you know, what kind of accident? How serious? And, you know, I mean, once I was able to talk about it, I asked her, well, how bad was the accident? And she said, "We don't really know. We're going to the hospital where he is." But the truth was that they wanted me to be able to have medication if I needed it before somebody told me what really happened to him, because it was a very bad accident. And in fact, he had already died, but we drove to the hospital, and the doctor there told me that my husband had been riding his motorcycle and had an intoxicated driver who didn't have a license and hadn't had one for years because of his history of drunk driving had entered the intersection at the same time my husband did. And so he hit him with the car. And not only did he hit him, but the intoxicated driver stopped the car, got out, tried to find out, you know, figure out what happened. When he saw what happened, he got back in the car and floored it to take off and get out of there, because it was hit and run. In the end, he just took off again. And when he took off a second time, he hit my husband again. So his injuries were so severe that he didn't live.
My goodness. And you knew that. You just knew.
I knew without any doubt that I was no longer married. I just couldn't figure out how that could be the case, how it could be true. But as it turns out, the doctor said his time of death was the same as the time when I had that experience.
Well, that's what your book is filled with, these very, some very sobering, some obviously prophetic, some very obviously, all of them seems like they're very serious, because they deal with some, you had a message to go home because your son needed you. You also had other kinds of experiences that concerning a nightmare you had about your daughter being involved in a fatal car crash, and that turned prophetic too?
I think so, because she was away at college, and I had this really awful dream about an accident. Mm-hmm. I had a dream. The insurance company called me. They said that she had been involved in a 3-car accident, that they knew her car was totaled, but they didn't have any other information. And the dream progressed. And in the end, about 2 weeks after the dream, Kim did have she had an accident that totally fit all of the description of the dream. And the only thing that was different about the accident at all from between the dream and her accident was that she lived. She had no injuries at all. Mm. But in the dream, she didn't live. Well, and of course, that drove me to my knees and drove definitely. Me to prayer. And I think that it was a warning from God.
Your book
has a call to prayer.
Your book has 80 devotionals and on all different kinds of topics. And you also are a writer for Chicken Soup for the Soul.
That's right. Yes, I enjoy doing that. I have work in several of their editions.
Well, thank you so much, Carol, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. Before we leave, please tell us how to get your book.
The book is available through Westbow Press, www.westbowpress.com. It's also available at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, thanks again, Carol.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The title of the book, Walking as Children of Light, a devotional, Carol A. Gibson, the author, and this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live 2-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Throwaway Kids, and the author is Peggy Case Aldheiser. And Peggy joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Peggy.
Hello.
An amazing story, your story. What you went through as a child, you and your sister, I guess the title kind of sums it up, The Throwaway Kids. This is what you say about your book. It's about a family torn apart by weakness and drunkenness and the mother who was selfish and thought only of herself. Two people should never have married. The nightmares of not being like the other kids in your school class and being treated differently. because you did not have nice clothes. You would be the only one in class who could never go on a field trip because no one cared and you sat at school alone. No one would pay your way. Well, that's a heartbreaker, but unfortunately that goes on in a lot of places, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. And it did for us, and we saw it happen to other children who had much less. And unfortunately, it does. And I think through my life, I've learned one thing. If I ever encountered something like that, I immediately took a couple of bucks out and helped a kid.
Right, right. Well, you would be called, like me, a senior citizen now. So we're getting up there. We're over 60. And yet this starts way back into the 40s.
Yes.
That's when you and your sister just were the throwaway kids. So take us back, Peggy.
Well, my mother, I suppose one could say in her behalf, she was an attractive woman, one of five daughters, and she was very talented. And in those years, I suppose you could give her quite a few compliments for being independent and brave enough to go out in the world and become an actress and bring in a paycheck. And she worked at WLW Studios in Greater Cincinnati. I can remember having a foster family sit us down in front of a huge radio that, you know, they sat on the floor back then and tell us that that was our mother. And in the story of coming over the radio. And so we would sit there and listen. But as she met my father and they married, and she had already been married before and divorced and had one child. And apparently my father could not handle her success and her working and the people that surrounding her. Perhaps he didn't feel as big himself. He did have a good job. The depression came along. He lost his job. We had a very nice home in Greater Cincinnati in called Indian Hills. And we had a maid because my mother worked, and the maid took care of my sister and I and a brother. And after the depression and he lost his job and he lost his good paycheck and things began to go wrong between the two of them, between his drinking, and he was an excessive drinker. He was an alcoholic. He never would get any better. It was constant fighting, constant upheaval. Like, as little as we were, you would go hide in your room, even in your closet, because the screaming, the yelling, and the hitting. And things just got worse and worse. And finally, I think it was by the time I was a little over 2 years old, there was a separation. She charged my father with extreme cruelty. And I can understand that, knowing what I know. And I even went back to Cincinnati many years later, still with a very strong need to know and understand what exactly happened to this family, and went back in there and went through court papers and found things that did say that, in fact, he was very cruel. So my mother attempted to keep us. It didn't work but a few months. She said her new husband and her had one room to live in and could not take care of us. My father, we went back to my father. My father attempted to keep us, but every time he either lost another job or he got sick or he was in jail for non-support of our brother, we would be sent to somebody else's home. Somebody he knew, he worked for, a neighbor who would feel sorry for the two little girls would take them in. So there was a constant move from one home to another, a different person's rules, a different feeling in a household. And I can remember some of them as being good and some of them as not being so good. And then there came a time when our father had his second heart attack, and we were then taken into the welfare system, and it was listed as an emergency. And we never were with our parents again after that. We saw them periodically. We loved our father, even though we knew his problems, and even though he would be so drunk in front of us,
it scared us, and it scared us when he put us in his car. We knew he was drunk. Even as young as we were, we knew that was not good. But he would hug us, and he would hold us on his lap and talk to us. And those little tiny bits of private moments of his showing us affection, we never forgot. And we loved him irregardless of the problems he had. Whereas our mother didn't have time for us and didn't want to. And when we would go see her, as was the court ruling for visitation, we knew we were unwelcome. Her hugs to us were so different from our father's. She would forcibly hug us and then look at us like, why aren't you hugging me back? Well, as her leaving me when I was 2 years old, I really didn't have the knowledge that a young child would have of, you're my mommy, I want you. And things just didn't get any better. And then being in the welfare system, going into a place called the Allen House, that was an adventure in itself because there were so many other children in our situation there of all ages.
How many were there?
I really don't know, but I would say if I could just look back and remember all the faces, it had to be 60, 70 kids or more.
Yeah.
There were, you know, several floors of rooms where beds were for them. And you go in and you would wear the clothes you had on one day they gave you, because anything personal you brought in, they took away from you to keep till you either went out or whatever. And the next week you might be wearing your friend's clothes that she had on the last week before. And from the Allen House, everybody had to go to school every day, and it didn't matter if it was summer, you didn't get a vacation, but that was okay. There were times there when it really wasn't so bad because all the kids would find a way to play. There was a lady there, Mrs. Rogers, God bless her. She was so kind and so good to the children, and she would sit on the front steps of the Allen House and have a tin full of green apples or Christmas candy. And the kids knew this every evening, and they looked forward to that. And she would hug you and talk to you and tell you that things were going to be all right. And that's what you wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Then we were taken to a foster home. And that is when the worst time of our life was ever to begin. It was going to be very difficult.
So why was that so much worse than the big Allen home?
Well, in the Allen House, there were other children who'd been through much the same thing, and, you know, they would laugh and play with you. At least you had their company. And we called it the farm. When we were taken onto the farm, we were there for the people, in my opinion, to get a paycheck, and we were labor. Without our help, as young as we were even, they couldn't have gotten in some of their crops and done the things that we did. And we were there to work, and work we did. And the foster parents were not loving. They never were attentive to us. We were in their way except for when it was time to work. And she would tell us, even in the winter, to get out of her house. We stunk. And we would stink up her house and get out of her house. So we would put our little coats on and we'd go out to the barn. And we spent an awful lot of time sitting in that cold barn in the hay mows. And things would never change. And one time we were in the barn because we would help get the cows in and put feed out for them. And she came walking behind the cows, and she had one of those old-fashioned fly sprayers where you push the handle in and out. And she would, every time she would get the chance, she would spray it on us, and she would hit us in the face with it, and we would choke, and tears would run down our face. And it's, thank God nothing happened to us all through our years because of things like that. But it just seemed like they didn't care what they did or said to us. And we, no matter what we did, we were no good. They really didn't know our parents, but they would make fun of our parents to us. They would constantly refer to our mother as a whore and our father as a drunk, no good drunk. And they would constantly tell us how our parents didn't care anything about us, or we wouldn't be there. And then they would call us no good liars. There was never anything to try to make us feel better. or lift up our spirits.
So how, Peggy, did you come out of that? With all that negative layer after layer building upon your little hearts and minds all those years, how in the world did you survive all that and really become feeling you were worthwhile and could accomplish things?
I, for some reason, was blessed with an inner thought that somewhere along the way, I could do something for myself that nobody else could do. And I was determined, as was my sister. We had each other. And that is the only thing we could work with. And even as a young girl at 16, when my soldier boy that I had met asked me to marry him, he was 19, and as young as we were, we talked about this. He knew what I was going through. And we said, we are not going to have any children until we see that we can make it and that we really love each other. He, too, had been fatherless for many years, but his mother had managed in her struggle to keep four children together with her, and she did a wonderful job. But he knew. He had missed having a father. And we were determined that things were going to be different, and I knew what I wanted. I wanted my home to be a sanctuary, and I wanted it to be safe, and I wanted love in my home. And if I had children, I knew then that I would never leave them. It just would never happen. The foster mother had said to me one time, and it is probably one of the very few things I ever kept in my thoughts, she said that animals were often better mothers than humans were, because animals would fight to the death for their children or their babies. And I would agree with that. I had seen that myself, and I've seen it, you know, in the years since with animals. Animals are very protective of their young. So I was just determined, and I knew that if I didn't try to see to it that things were better, they simply would not be. And I've been very blessed that they have been. And my sister's the same way. Neither one of us were ever divorced, and we both kept our children, and we raised them.
Well, that's fantastic, Peggy. Well, just in the closing moments of this discussion, what about those who just say, okay, you had it rough, quit feeling sorry for yourself, mm-hmm. and I don't want to hear any more about how pitiful it was for you? What do you say to folks like that?
I say to them they haven't been through it, or they wouldn't say that, because it's something that goes down deep inside of you emotionally, and it's not something you can just shake off. And if you're lucky enough to have somebody that listens and understands, you feel better around them. And I think a lot of the times when my sister and I were growing up and going to school, that a lot of people would say, we never knew this. Why didn't you tell us? Nobody ever knew. That was the reason they didn't know, because once you're told, oh, you're feeling sorry for yourself, and then the person makes fun of you, you crawl deeper inside yourself and you don't talk about it. The only place we had to go and cry was the old barn. And if these foster parents had family over for Christmas, Thanksgiving, or whatever, we were sent to the back porch of the barn. We could not sit at the same table with that family in that foster home. Then we were called to come in and wash the dishes and have whatever was left to eat. There was never a holiday. And I said someday my holidays will be far better than that. And they were. They're more important to me because of what I didn't have then.
Well, you have proven, obviously, all those naysayers, they didn't know Peggy. They didn't understand what Peggy was made out of.
I learned one thing, and I would tell people who've been through it, or maybe some kid who might hear this going through it now, you can cry and be strong at the same time and never be ashamed of your tears.
Very well put, Peggy. We've been listening to Peggy Case Aldheiser. She's the author of her book, The Throwaway Kids. Peggy, tell us how to get your book.
It's with Trefford Publishing, and you can go up online to find them, Trefford.com or Amazon.com. They've been really good. People are saying that they've had a good business with them. Barnes & Noble, just various ones like that. But if you go up on Treffords.com, their website, they have everything there and can tell you whatever you need to know.
Thank you so much, Peggy, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you. I appreciate it very, very much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Trafford Publishing.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Finding God in the Seasons of Divorce, Volume 1, Autumn and Winter, Seasons of Loss and Sorrow. And the author is Richard D. Crooks, and Richard joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Steve.
Thank you for being with us. This book has your personal experiences to help those who are struggling through divorce and other helps from the Word of God. A very significant book for those who are going through this crisis. Let me read what you have written, a little bit more details about your book. You say this: this book is a collection of daily Christian meditations specially written for those who are caught in the throes of divorce, but also useful for others experiencing major losses in life. In the book, I seek to offer support on a daily basis. Other helps out there are often in the form of a weekly meeting or occasional counseling session, but this book provides something to encourage and help day by day. And in the book, sharing from my own experiences helps people realize that they are not alone or weird. No matter how it feels during this bizarre struggle of divorce, others have also faced the same struggles and survived. And I'm sure when you're going through this, you wonder if you're going to survive because it's so painful, right?
Yeah, it can be pretty tough, pretty lonely. I'm not sure everybody experiences that. There's some that, but it's pretty devastating for folks.
Yeah, and some others may not admit it, but deep down in their souls, they may be wondering, what's wrong with me? Why couldn't I make this work?
Oh, absolutely. There's a real sense of taking the blame or feeling like I messed up everything or I'm now a failure. And,
right.
There's a lot to that.
Have I sinned? That I'm sure for Christians, some may feel that weight.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I talked to a young gal not too awful long ago, and her first response when and she had just recently got divorced, it made her wonder if God ever would love her again.
Right.
Kind of sad.
Well, Richard, tell us a little bit about your background and why you decided to write this book.
Well, my background, I've done a lot of different things in life, but the context of this book has been mainly that I've served as a pastor for a number of years and a campus minister. And in the midst of all of that, I also experienced a divorce myself. My wife filed for divorce some years ago. And I found, as I dealt with people who've been divorced, that from a pastor's perspective, when I did it, say, in a counseling session or just a happen casual conversation, before my divorce, I was probably helpful. I hope I was. But after my divorce, all of a sudden, it was a whole different level, almost like you're reaching into a hidden subculture in America, and was able to connect with people in a much deeper way. And I found their response was radically different. They felt more encouraged and sometimes not so alone. And as we put all that together, I realized some of the things I dealt with myself, as well as things I'd seen, it'd sure be nice if people could have something like this. Because it's a lonely time, and I find that often, like when I was pastoring with people, you didn't always have time to be there every day for a conversation. And the book allows them to have some of that support. And I'm a big student of the Bible in lots of different ways. I had some pretty extensive training in that. And it's hard for people to know how to find the help they need in the Scriptures. And this book is laid out in ways that could help them jump right to things they would need.
Well, tell us about these daily devotionals. That's a unique aspect of your book. Daily, we can get some support, some encouragement, and even get some of, I guess, some teaching, some feeling that God is near us through His Word.
Yeah, and that's the goal. I'm a person that's always been big on daily devotionals in my own life, used a lot of different things, and they've really enriched a lot of my understanding. And I found during my divorce time, as I went through that, that sometimes that time in the Scripture was the only thing that got me through a day. I would find something that I could hang on to. And so I just kind of pulled some of that together and shared it here. And it's designed as a daily devotional, although some people may jump around by topics. I could easily imagine, as a matter of fact, one of my friends looked at some and did, but I can imagine the day that somebody's going to go to court to negotiate something over children. Well, they can go to the index, find specific readings about children that could help them.
Not only do we have these daily devotionals, you have some special days, special holidays, you have, other special days of your birthday, your ex's birthday, the wedding anniversary. Now, tell us about why you included those kinds of days in the book.
Well, even with people who've lost a spouse, as one of the people who read it shared with me, you know, those holidays, that first cycle, when you're by yourself and you're having to restructure everything, can be very, very difficult. And sometimes the memories are overwhelming. And you know, I remember a shift for myself, like in Christmas, that getting out Christmas decorations again was hard, and trying to figure out how to adjust, how to change, that would fit where I'm at now. And some of those holidays are days, like you said, your ex's birthday that or your old anniversary that people, you know, in regular devotional books might not think that much about, but for a person going through a divorce, they stick out, and they can haunt you. And so that first year through, especially having something to kind of help you think through how you redirect stuff, can make a lot of difference.
We're talking about Memorial Day, Labor Day, MLK Day, President's Day, Valentine's Day, Easter, Mother's Day, Father's Day. You're covering them all, along with Independence and Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. It's all those days, like you just pointed out, probably have memories.
Yeah, well, and memories, and the fact that all of a sudden, if you have children involved, the way you celebrate the holiday has changed. You may not get to see them Christmas Day. You might only get them Christmas Eve or Halloween. This may not be a year you get to go with your kids out or Easter. You know, you have to learn how to adapt and adjust, and how to work things out as best you can with your ex and with the kids. And it's a different thing.
Now, your book is also includes a focus not only on people going through divorce, but just people going through other kinds of losses.
Yeah. You know, anytime we experience loss, I mean, I think of people like that we've seen in recent years and recently in hurricanes who lose their whole livelihood and try to figure out how do I put life together from here. And, you know, there's devotionals there about loneliness. There's devotionals about how do you make choices when you feel like you've lost everything, and how does God fit into that equation? Is he there? How do you access him? What about, you know, your support network and being able to develop one? And there's just so many parallels. Even though divorce has its own unique things, there's a lot of it that's very similar to other kinds of losses.
And then often people who are going through divorce, or, you know, the divorce is finally finalized, the way they're treated by others, they have to deal with that. Often it changes.
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting that you talk to people and you'll hear all sorts of different reactions from people that were friends before. Some of them aren't sure what to do with you, or sometimes I've heard of people being a little standoffish, as if they're going to either catch it or you're going to take their spouse away from them. And in the church, it's been really hard because our theology often gets in the way, and we have a hard time figuring out how do you connect with people going through this without damaging your theology. And yet, you know, these people are at a point they need that contact. And sometimes we don't do it so well. I've heard some pretty tough stories from people who felt like they were let down, or maybe even asked not to come back to our church, or, you know, that people wouldn't know how to relate. And I was guilty of some of that to a degree even before, because I remember a person visiting with me as a pastor and needed hours and hours of time. And I didn't always have hours and hours of time, and I didn't really understand how he was feeling. And so it's hard to build that bridge.
It isn't necessarily a self-help book. It isn't necessarily a theological exposition on divorce, and it's not necessarily a prescription for healing from divorce wounds. How would you describe your book then?
Well, the way I describe it is it's written for regular people. I actually had a person the other day tell me how much they appreciated it. They weren't book readers, but they were able to get into this because it's just very straightforward, very plain. But what it does is it provides a sense of you're not walking through your experience alone. There are other people who have gone through this, and some of the hints they gave can be very helpful. As a matter of fact, the book contains a lot of hints that people gave to me that I just pass on. And it also is just a way to help people who are going through this be able to sort out for themselves how their life is going to be, and how their faith is going to be, and how can they get in touch with God again if they feel like they've lost him or he's lost them, and what trying to share some teaching, like you said, of things the scripture talks about, the kind of character that God is, that can be there for us when we need him to be there.
This is volume one, and you headline that Autumn and Winter, Seasons of Loss and Sorrow. So volume two is Spring and Summer?
Yeah, Spring and Summer, and it's the idea of warmth and renewal and hope, because there comes a point, and the seasons like are not about the nature seasons, they're about the seasons of your experience going through a divorce, because the first part is everything falls apart and you begin feeling all the loss. But there comes a point when, just like, you know, in springtime when you look down and there's a crocus or the leaves start to bud, that happens in your heart and in your life in divorce. It comes a point when you kind of begin to think, well, maybe it's going to be okay, and gosh, maybe this will help and that will help. And then there's lots of things about how are you going to put together, you know, the next phase of your life. And that's what Volume 2, and that's supposed to come out sometime next spring.
What if someone isn't a Christian?
You know, then for them, they may choose not to read all of it. They may, the daily devotions or the meditations are, because so much of it is personal experience and sharing of things I've heard and learned and seen, a lot of it will connect anyway. They may or may not choose to do the scripture readings in there, but that's okay. And there's things in there, maybe they're not a Christian, but maybe at this point they feel like, you know, they're discovering, well, who is God? What is that? There's stuff in there to help that person if they're trying to find God in it, too.
So at a time when we're going through so much heartache or frustration, confusion, we may not know where to turn, here your book is, in a simple way, giving the Word of God, and there are those who are desperately hungry for the Word of God.
Well, not only that, and there's also people who have family members or loved ones or friends or parishioners that are, that they look and they watch their lives and they see it falling apart with divorce, and they want to try to help somehow, but it's hard to figure out how. And this is a pretty tangible thing that somebody can share with a friend, and it can make a lot of difference for them.
Sounds like a great gift for this time of year for folks we know who are going through this kind of an experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, if it's especially the first one, it's a very difficult time. And something like this can maybe give them hope.
We've been listening to Richard D. Crooks. He is the author of his book, Finding God in the Seasons of Divorce. This is Volume 1, and there is a Volume 2 coming in the spring. Volume 1, Autumn and Winter, Seasons of Loss and Sorrow. Of course, Volume 2 will deal with the hope of spring and summer.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, tell us how to get your book.
Well, there's several ways you can get it. The website is under construction, should be up soon. That's Finding God Devotionals. But you can find me on Facebook. Just look up Finding God in the Seasons of Divorce. I have a blog. You could Google, do some kind of a search on Seasons of Divorce, and it'll pop up in there. So you can order directly from me. You can order from the publisher, Westbow Press. You can order it online from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and other places. It's also available as an ebook for people that like the Nooks and Kindles and all that. You can get them that way as well.
Thank you, Richard, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.